my name is Mansi and I am obsessed with unearthing every little secret about parenting, babies, business and wellness that will help you navigate through all the questions you always wanted to ask but didn't know who to. I'm a simple woman from the maximum city who quit her high-paying marketing job to start India's most trusted discovery platform for parents after a six-month backpacking trip with her two-year-old daughter. We just rupees 10,000. I now run a seven-figure online business with kidstoppress.com and connect with over 10 million parents a month. I share our favorites every single day on the website and on our social media so you can have the best moments with your children and leave the discovering to us. Think of this as your play date with a fellow mom over wine or coffee who loves her kids but also needs her happy ass without them. Shy away from the real talk? No ways. Whether it's money, business, failure, baby, sex, or frustrations of not keeping it all together, we've got you covered. So now grab your tea, sit cozy, and stay tuned for another stellar episode of Keep It Real podcast by kidstoppress.com. Studying to be a finance professional, but known as a key voice in the design field today, she's someone who got married at 22, had her first child at 24, moved to India, and of course what's very interesting is that she actually got onto the design journey because she couldn't find the perfect nursery for her children. So she went on building a store, then helped many other parents build out their perfect and dream nurseries. She's someone who you can go to right from finding the perfect bed to finding the perfect planter, has collaborated right from A.R. Rehman to Padma Shri Sunita Kohli. She's grown her Instagram page in the last 18 months from 0 to 500k. She's now a key leading voice in the design space and someone I really, really look up to. Please welcome Riddhi Khosla Jalan.
Thank you, Mansi, for that fantastic introduction. Thank you for having me.
Tell me all about it. How does it feel to move based to India? Was it a tough decision? And of course, have a baby at 24 when today everybody wants to have it not before 40.
So I lived in Singapore and LA, two very beautiful cities with every opportunity available. But my husband happened to be Mumbai based. So I said, okay, let's move to Mumbai. Having said that, I think it was the best decision I made. I would not look back. I think while Singapore, LA, and all these other cities are beautiful, the warmth that you get in India, you just don't get anywhere else. And you can have the most beautiful house in LA, but it's, to me, a very lonely life. As opposed to India, where the door is always open, my kids always have something or the other happening, there is a community of people that help raise your kids. Yeah. And I think for those reasons, I would never move to any other country. And we're booming. Yeah. India is growing. Yeah. So this is the place to be.
And how is it to have a child at 24?
I think it's a child having a child because that's what it really felt like. It was a surprise that I was going to be a mom, but I embraced it. And now I'm probably one of the youngest moms in my kids' batch. But we listen to the same music and I understand what she's saying. And I think if I had to rewind back, I would do it exactly the same way. And I have two daughters. I wish the same for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I can so relate to it because I keep telling people that if you're sure that you want to have babies, just have them really young.
Yes.
Because there's just nothing. Like I have two girls as well. And yeah. I have my kids at 27. And if I had to rewind back, I would just do exactly the same because, like, we're going for a Taylor Swift concert this weekend. And I kid you not, it's so amazing that we now share clothes, we share music, we share.
You're a Swiftie too.
Whereas I'm a Swiftie too. I'm a proud Swiftie at 40, and I don't know how that feels, but I just completely understand. Versus your views on people, especially women trying to delay their birthing age.
No. I mean, I feel everyone has their own journey. You need to find the right partner also. I think we're blessed that we did find our partner young. But if you do find your partner young, I would really recommend having a child early.
Yeah.
Raise the child until at least 6, 7 and then start your professional career. Because I think if you try to do both, it's not impossible, but it is far more difficult. So
You know, it sounds so strange when I recorded this podcast, which is, by the way, one of our top podcasts, which is why I chose to have my kids at 27. I said exactly the same thing,
yeah.
Which was that, you know, you're at this mid-management level.
Exactly.
In your professional journey, where if you take a break at that time, if you have to, like yeah. I've never taken a pause even for a day after the kids, but even if you have to, yeah. for whatever reasons, you're not living with family, you don't have family around, you don't have the right support system, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It still makes so much sense, because taking that break is not going to slow you down, which is the biggest myth, that having a baby is going to slow me down. It's going to be a full stop in my professional career, which actually is not. It could be a temporary pause, but it's yes. not the end.
I completely agree. And now that I've built a team for social media, a lot of my job requirements, I even say if you're a stay-at-home mom or you took a break, please still apply, because yeah. I make sure you have flexi hours. And there are a lot of women who are looking to come back.
Yeah.
And I think it is a much easier space for
women
to rejoin the workforce. Yeah. It is a pause.
COVID just did it for us. I think yeah. so many women could now get the flexibility and actually yes. come back. That I think yes. is commendable. Really, tell me, after what really conspired into your design journey? Like, how did that happen?
Well, I went down the wrong path initially.
Which is so important, because that's the only way you'll find the right one.
I mean, I learned what I didn't want to do before I learned what I wanted to do. So I studied finance and marketing in USC in LA. And I used to sit outside the architecture school and be like, oh, you know, I wish I did that. But architecture is a 5-year program, as opposed to finance and marketing, which is a 4-year program.
Yeah.
And I was doing well in finance and marketing. And I called my dad. I said, Dad, should I do architecture? And he said, you know, but you're doing well, so why rock the boat?
Yeah.
And I think at 21, I didn't have the self-confidence or the gusto to make that call.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and got a degree. But I kept, you know, at night looking at yeah. Pinterest pictures and be like, this is really nice. I wouldn't watch Netflix, but I would go on Pinterest. So I said, let me pursue it. So when I was pregnant with my second child, I decided to go back to college and get a degree. And I was like the pregnant lady who would waddle around with all these other 18-year-olds. And I would be much older and they would hang out in the evening. And I'm like, no, I have another child at home. I'm pregnant. I need to pee. Like, you know, this yeah. is not, I can't do what you're doing. But it did show me how committed I am to yeah. interior design. And it did reaffirm that this is the path that I had to take. So a few twists and turns, but finally figured out what I wanted to do.
Incredible. And then how did the store happen? Like what made you start the store?
So I was a mom. Mm-hmm. I already had one child, and by the time I graduated, I had gave birth to my second child. And having lived in the US and in Singapore, I would be like, I need a nice cot, or you know, I need my nursery to look a certain way. But there was nothing in India. So I said, let me make it. So I opened.
And this is way back in?
This is 7 years ago.
7 years.
7 years ago, and I opened my own store called Little Nest, which filled the gap, and it did really well. But maybe we'll get to that, where it was a lot to manage. I think I took on too much on my plate, but I felt there was a niche, and people were opening up to the idea of having a store where you make children's furniture and you mm-hmm. can go buy it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's kind of how it went into that.
Timmy, were there any moments when, you know, you were running the store, managing two kids, where you said, I can't do this. I just want to give up.
Oh, many times. Because I didn't realize having kids is a lot of manual labor.
Mm.
Physically, I mean, of course, we're blessed to have staff at home who can help, but they still want you to feed them and bathe them and read them the storybooks at night and spend time with them. So it's a lot of physical time, as opposed to when your kids are older, it's mental time.
Yeah.
And having a store and a workshop and everything is also required me to be there physically. So many times I'd be like, this is going great, but I don't know how I can handle it. And I was school mom, like class CR and yeah. everything at the same time.
You're quite brave to take that. I've never taken the class CR. I think my kids will be the de facto CR, because they anyways keep tab of everything
right.
that needs to happen. I don't have the courage. I can run Kidstar Press, but I don't think I can be a class CR for sure. Like I can.
I think it's been there. I've done it once. I've never done it again. And now I'm the mom who's like, Sheetha never shows up in school only. Oh, she doesn't help. I have become that mom.
Do you hate it?
I do get tagged in school by other moms. I do. And it comes down through the kids and it comes on to my kids.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example, and I don't know if another working mom can relate to it, but my daughter came home crying a few days ago. She was at a birthday party. Two kids were playing basketball. One child fell on the floor and he started being really mean to my daughter, and she's 10. And he said, oh, are you going to cry about it? Are you going to go to your mom? Oh, wait, you don't even have a mom. She's never there. So, you know, and then my daughter started bawling and she said, he was talking about you and how you're not home because you travel so much. And that broke my heart because my daughter shouldn't have to deal with this.
Yeah.
And I am home. I'm not available in school,
but
I am home with my kids. I know exactly what's happening. So those moments obviously kind of shift the earth beneath my feet once in a while. And then you have to recalibrate, and I have to tell them, listen, mom is working. I'm not just wasting time trying to look pretty. It's work. It's I'm fulfilling my purpose. And she's like, I know, I'm proud of you, but it breaks my heart when these things happen. So I think you have to take
when
it in your stride.
You said, I need to recalibrate. How do you do that? I'm sure as working moms, we go through a lot of this, right? Like where...
Yeah.
Overwhelm pulls us down, or something that happened in school pulls us down, or you know, something someone said.
Social expectations. Yeah.
Like it pulls us down, and we're aware, we're conscious that it's only a passing phase.
Yes.
But we know that, you know, we need to bring ourselves back up, but we know that we need to do it.
Yes.
So I'll tell you how I do it, but I want to know how you do it.
I think it does take that gusto out of the work that you're doing, right? Because you're going full force, blinders on, and then this kind of shakes you up. But the first thing I do is I check with my family and especially my husband saying, hey, should I pull back? You know, do you feel it too? Or is it just an incident? Like, I need another person's perspective.
Yeah.
So I do have a sounding board that helps me. And then I realize that ultimately my kids are watching me.
Yeah.
And what... how they watch me can never be replaced by what they learn in school.
Yeah.
So I have two daughters. I understand that I'm the role model and I kind of set the bar for them. So I think that automatically kind of says, no. I'm doing the right thing by showing my girls that you got to go after your dream, no matter how big it is. I actually come across as a very type A alpha personality. That's not who I was 2 years ago. It flipped because of Instagram, because I immediately saw success, which I wasn't expecting. And then I realized that there is a potential there that was untapped. And then I realized, wait, if I can do this, then maybe I can do more. What is more? And I think that's when I started thinking, am I dreaming too small? Should I dream bigger? And now I tell my team, it's been a year. So I say, guys, you made these suggestions, but are you dreaming too small? Think bigger. I want to push the boundary. Let's try. What's the worst? It won't happen. I'm okay with that. But think, like, I push them to think bigger. I push myself to think bigger. So I think that drive has made me alpha. Mm-hmm. But honestly, for 35 years, I was very much a beta and very happy and content in life.
So my recalibration is pretty similar. But, you know, I keep telling this to people that there are triggers and there are coping mechanisms. I know what my triggers are because I'm very conscious. And I know when things pull me down, I know what will bring me back up.
Right.
And for me to, and I know exactly by now that is it a temporary trigger? Is it a permanent trigger? Mm-hmm. So I'm really that conscious about it. So if it's a temporary trigger, I know that, okay, you know, I just need to run or I need to cook or I need to clean. These are my coping mechanisms. It's a quick fix. I know next day I will be fine. If it is slightly longer, it stayed for more than a day or so, then I know I need to do something about it. And my next immediate step is to write. Because write is my biggest release. And when I write, and I ask myself, and I keep saying this to everyone, the minute I write, okay, what next? Just those two words changed the game for me to believe that I just immediately know, okay, so they're feeling like this. What next? So then automatically the answers of whether I should slow down, whether I should continue. In my head, I don't give myself really too many choices because I think choices is what creates confusion. So the minute I reduce the choices, the not doing enough or slowing down is not an option. Saying no to things that don't seem priority is an option. So it's never saying no or slowing down growth. It is about, I'm here for the marathon, right? So I've got to pace it out.
Right.
And therefore, what doesn't seem priority right now? Like, example, I have awards coming in exactly a month. The amount of speaking assignments I've reduced or refused in the month of March is significant. But I know that I would just recalibrate it post the 3rd of April. I just know that. It's just a phase where some part of me is being more demanding than the other part, and I'll fulfill that part. I completely believe that balance is possible, just not all at the same time.
So I think a lot of what you said resonated with me, especially four major things. Number one, how you write.
Yeah.
I talk to myself. I'm a verbal person. So in the shower or in my bedroom, I'm just talking and reimagining situations. Yeah. And my husband knows that I mumble to myself, but it's talk therapy with myself. I think that's what it is. Yeah. I think learning to say no.
Yeah.
Is something I just learned about a week ago, because everything else was, yes, I'll be there, yes, I'll be there. But now prioritizing and learning to say no. Also, when you're growing, it's hard to say no to everything. So that, and I think how you said, what next? For me, it is, what's the solution?
Yeah.
So that is like, okay, we understood the problem. What is the solution?
Right.
So like you said, also, it's a marathon. So sometimes you slow down, sometimes you pace up, sometimes you slow down. So that's the...
No, to 100%. Tell me, after the store, what happened?
After the store, I got some amazing clients who said, okay, you've done the kids' room. We like your work. Why don't you do the whole house?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, are you sure? Really? I haven't done a kitchen before or a bathroom. They're like, no, just do it. We like your aesthetics. So ended up doing full homes. And that happened a few years. And then just stumbled upon making content for Instagram a year ago.
Yeah. And tell me that journey, because you consciously decided to stop the other part of it and get whole hog into doing this. So like while we were chatting, she literally said, like, from hiring interior designers to hiring
social media.
How did you switch that?
So the purpose of going on Instagram was to share whatever knowledge I have and to tell people what is the latest in interiors and home decor. Because I wasn't getting access to it, at least the way I wanted it. So I said, okay, let me just put myself out there. It was a bit of a nerve-wracking experience the first 2-3 times, and then I was okay. And once I started doing that, I was still taking on projects and doing everything, but the numbers started skyrocketing on Instagram.
What did you do differently?
I'm myself. Guys, this is what you get on Instagram. There is no filter. There is no professional hair and makeup artist. All my initial videos were shot by my kids. So it's 100% me. And if I don't like something, I will not tell you about it. It's not just because if they say, we'll pay you, I'll do it. It's nothing like that. So it's 100% authentic.
Right.
That is what I swear by.
But I mean, you started a year ago. And the reason I ask this question is because there's so many women, men, people who want to take the plunge, but they already feel like the space is so cluttered. Right. What am I value adding? I think the biggest thing about people saying, like, I don't think the world needs what I need to share. And then, like, there's so many other people doing it. Why me?
So
how did you answer that?
I flip the perspective. If those are the questions people are asking, then they're doing it for other people. I did this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was very simple. I was fulfilling my own need. And whoever wanted to come along for the ride could come along. So I thought, even if I have 5,000 or 10,000 followers by the end of the year, I'm okay with it.
Right.
I'm not chasing some number. But even now, I do it for myself. I know the right answers. It's for my followers and all of that. But it's not. It's for the interior designer I was, who didn't have access to the latest in materials and home decor and products. I'm catering to that girl who I was.
Right.
So it's not about the follower base. I'm still doing it for me.
Right.
So I'm not worried about the clutter.
Yeah. But how do you know? Is there never a temptation that, oh, this worked, let me do more of this?
There is. And there is a bit of trial and error that goes into it. Like, I know certain things will do well.
But my whole page can't just be those specific things.
Yeah.
It needs to be a combination of things, but I also like challenging myself. That's just a natural quality. So I get bored of doing the same content. So even if it's doing well, you're like, no, I can't watch this again and I can't showcase this similar product. Like, let's do something totally different.
Yeah.
So that is what excites me. So,
and what was that first inflection point where something did well and you got motivated to do more of it?
I mean, of course, seeing success on your page motivates you.
Yeah.
Seeing success anywhere.
Was there one key piece or something that moved the game?
So there was this one video which my daughter shot. And at that time, I had like 7,000 followers. And it went viral. Some 200,000 views, which now is normal. But at that time, I was like, guys, look what's happening.
Yeah. What was it about?
In that video, the lighting is bad. The voice is not clear. And my daughter had a cold. So in the middle of the video, she's actually blown her nose. And when I was going to post it, I was like, should I? Like, this is really bad quality. The product is great, but the production is so bad. And I said, let me just do it.
Yeah.
7,000 people will see it, but it's okay, I live. And it went viral. But that taught me that people don't actually care so much for production. It's always nice to see things that are well put together, but they care about how much value is it adding to them.
Right.
What is the core of the content?
And what was the content?
It was about how you can automate switches without wiring.
Yeah, so that was an important piece. I want to go back to that video and check that. But that's interesting. So you truly believe that it's more authentic, value add. If you have to sum up five things that actually, you know, sum up your 0 to 500K journey, what would that be?
Be yourself, be yourself, be yourself, be yourself.
Okay, we need more than that. We need more than that.
I mean it. I think, okay, definitely be yourself. Work like a crazy person. I work 100 hours a week. And that shows on my page. So when I met A.R. Rahman, I asked him, I said, I'm very curious. I don't speak anything about music. I'm as tone deaf as can be. Why do you follow me?
Yeah.
And he said, because I see how hard you work. And I have respect for that. And I understand it. That's why I like watching what you do. And I was, that's when it clicked in my head. I said, okay, people get it. People who work hard recognize other people working hard, and there's a certain amount of respect.
Yeah.
So be yourself, work hard. Don't do it for the money. I think the money comes, but be true to your purpose as to why you're doing it. And I would definitely say be to the point, cut it short. Like some people drone on and on. I hope I'm not doing that in this podcast, but get to the point and don't try to impress anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my five.
Interesting. But tell me, these are great, but the algorithm is still, like people say, partial to a few. So I want to know what was the partial bit about
me? There's no magic wand. I promise you, there's nothing that is...
So tell me, 100 hours a week, what's your breakup like? So what does a week in the life of your content play look like, and how early or late or whatever that you planned it?
So every day is a Monday. So when I say 100 hours a week, it means including Saturday, Sunday. And I am counting the amount of travel time. So I travel 3 days a week. I leave by 7 a.m. and I'm back home by 9 p.m. So if I have a shoot in Hyderabad, there's something interesting happening there, then that's a lot of travel time. I'm away from my kids, I'm away from home, that's work.
Yeah.
We post at least five times a week. And it's not just shooting content and say, chalo, put it there. This work requires a lot of networking as well, which I did not know. So you're not just working during the day, then you also have to meet people at night.
Yes.
Because that gives you more access to even more things to show your followers.
Yeah.
So it's a constant thing that you have to do.
Right. Tell me, are you that mom who tries to take a morning evening so you're not spending the night away? Or is it just me? Do you do that too?
Will I be a bad mom if I say no? It's not because of that. My kids are usually asleep by the time I reach home. It's just because I want to be alert and ready for the next day to work again.
Right.
It's not, I know I should say it's for my kids, but my kids are 13 and 10 and my husband is amazing when it comes to looking after them. So what I do is I might travel sometimes for 5 days and then the next 2 weeks I'm home.
Lovely.
So that's the balance that I have.
Yeah, interesting. Tell me on the design part of it, right? How can we have somebody who's worked in the interior space for the last 7 years and not ask her, what do you see Indian parents do right and wrong when it comes to building out their nurseries?
I think sometimes Indian parents want to overdo their nursery when it should not be. I think it needs to be very clutter-free and clean because kids come with their own paraphernalia. And I think a lot of times it's done for the other person who will be entering the room and not for the child. So you'll have all these beautiful things and the library would be stacked, you know, from floor to ceiling, but the child can't reach that library. So I would say actually have it, you know, linear down where the child can reach the books against the entire wall instead of going floor to ceiling. You know, so it's done sometimes not keeping the child in mind.
Right. So tell me, what would be your do's and don'ts from like a 0 to 2 or 2 to 5 and then of course upwards?
I think 0 to 16 is definitely don't clutter the space because kids are constantly outgrowing things and getting new things. So the less decor items you have, the less furniture you have, the better it is. Always use multifunctional pieces. So if you have a limitation in space, then you have a study table that turns into a dressing table or a stool that also has storage in it. So multifunctional spaces or pieces is very important. A third, keep it very well lit. It's, you don't need mood lighting in a child's room. It needs to have a lot of bright light. It needs to feel fresh, clean, airy. Use light colors. I wouldn't recommend the deep blues that a lot of people use if they're going to have a boy. Keep it light, keep it fresh. And I think don't over design it because the child needs to be involved with the room. So keep space for pegboards or keep space where they can actually move their study table around if they feel, okay, I don't want to learn to say, let me move it on this wall. So give the child that freedom.
Right.
Is what I would say.
Interesting. And any must-haves, absolute must-haves while you're setting up or the or you may want to say the mistakes that people make, whatever.
While doing up their...
Like again, if you break it down from a, you know, like first nursery and then to a child's room, it'll just help instead of doing a 0 to 16.
So I think a lot of times when people are just about to have a child, they have a cot, which is great. But traditionally, we had just mattresses on the floor, which I think is also great because now you're not wasting furniture. Sometimes that cot becomes redundant after a while. And yes, you can donate it somewhat to someone. But if you have a mattress that is on the floor, there's no fear of the child falling. Child's not moving anywhere. You can sleep next to the child. The Didi can be next to the child. I think that just simplify it from 0 to 2. That would really ease it. 2 to 6, keep everything that cannot be broken in the room because that is when a child is experimenting.
Yeah.
Keep things very movable. So you have those storage baskets with deals and things. So that's what I like to use. And as a child grows older, then they need much bigger storage spaces because the size of things they use is larger. So even their cricket bats are no longer the small plastic bats. They're those solid big ones. So your storage spaces need to be larger in size instead of small little cubby holes.
Right, right. And tell me, in the process of, like, you know, while you're designing for different sorts of families from North India to West to South, what are some of the nuances that you actually notice, which are very different and it just starkly comes up? Because I really like the blend of culture that India has.
Yes.
But I know it comes with its own idiosyncrasies. So what is that like?
I think every state has their own aesthetic sense, right? I think the more north you go, the more shiny and bright it becomes. And the more south you go, the more earthy and rustic the feel is. So there's no right or wrong. I think it's what people like and... whatever makes them comfortable in their space.
Right. Tell me, what is it that we don't know about Riddhi from Instagram? Tell us about that.
I don't show my personal life on Instagram. In fact, my team tells me to put things on Instagram that are personal and then I record it and then I just never put it out there because I'm so
what's personal
how I'm really feeling about certain things. When I hit 500k, I should feel really ecstatic, and I was happy, but I wasn't like, oh my god, this is amazing. I didn't feel that. But of course, I put a message out there saying thank you so much for helping me achieve this, because that gratitude needs to go out. But it was a normal day for me. My teams,
I
get a
cake. Are you scared of being vulnerable?
I am just a closed person. I don't know if it means I'm scared of being vulnerable. I don't know. But I've never been an open person, even with my friends. Like, I'm very in my box and happy to be in my box. And I don't show too much of my kids or my husband, or if you see it, you see from a distance. Not too close. I don't know, maybe.
That was a conscious choice.
That was a conscious choice because that's my comfort zone.
Hmm.
Getting too personal. Like, a lot of people say, give us a home tour of your house.
Yeah.
I've never done it.
Yeah.
I don't see myself doing it
either. And you know that'll work.
It'll work. People try to get glimpses from the reels I do because I might pick a corner. But no one has seen my whole house.
Right. Are you saving it for the million? Or you want to do like a reveal?
Is that an idea right there? Should I?
But tell me, why are you so scared to get out of that box? And is that misunderstood? Because I know for a lot of women that often gets misunderstood, especially if they're successful in their space.
I just feel it shouldn't be about that. I want my page to be about, I want it to be professional, and I want it to be about the work I'm doing, not because who I am personally.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. In my head, it's very separate. One is work, one is personal.
Right.
So people never really see what is happening in the personal life. But everyone is after me to show my personal life. So maybe...
maybe we need another page for it.
No, I know one page is enough to manage. I can't
see,
have
I wasn't page. The only one who said she doesn't want more pages to
no,
manage.
No, no,
when anyways, managing two kids... and a venture and a page. Now we can't add more.
No.
More
to be more efficient in life, guys. Can't have
Can't have that. Yeah. But tell me, when you're managing, you know, this demarcation that you have, is that often misunderstood for arrogance?
I've never seen. I mean, no one's ever actually.
They're not telling you.
No, maybe they're not telling me. I haven't seen it that way.
But with the first part that we actually started out, where somebody called out to your child, does that mean that it's coming from the parent and it's actually happening?
I think they're seeing that I'm not an involved parent because they see me travel so much and they see only the work part. They don't see that I'm sitting with my kid and I'm reading and we're discussing and having dinner table conversations. They don't see that part.
So do you feel the need to justify?
No. I don't. If I did, I think I would have already
put some bit of it.
But I don't. This is my life and my kids are happy and sorted.
Yeah.
I don't need to overcompensate in any way.
Right. Yeah. Tell me 5 traits of Riddhi as a mom, which Instagram has never seen.
I'm very practical. I believe that you need to be absolutely independent. So I don't run my kids' schedule. I don't even have a timetable for them. I don't schedule their classes. They're 10 and 13. They do it all themselves. I don't look at their homework and their test. They need to manage. So I believe a lot in independence. I expect 100% effort. I do not care if you fail the grade. You can get a A, B, C, D, E, F. Makes no difference. But effort needs to be A.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my kids get that. And sports and academics are both very important. It's not one is more important than the other.
Right. So I think, interesting. Yeah. And has there been a moment where the grade has dipped and you blamed it on yourself?
No. Can I be totally honest? No. Because...
because that's the first thing that we do as moms, right? Like, anything that happens to anybody else, we go into victim mode at the drop of a hat.
So I wouldn't say if the grade has dipped, but I would say if socially or I'm feeling like my child is not happy in any way, is it because I'm not home enough? Yes. Mm-hmm. Not just because of a grade, because I don't put so much importance on grades as I do on effort. So yeah, the first question is, should I cut down and should I be around a lot more? And I have faced those a few times, because every child has their ups and downs. But I think that's the balance, right? When I think my child might be struggling in something, then I pull back and I tell my team, okay, I need to be around for the next few weeks. Let's be creative as to how I can get my work done. Or my kids are going to be really busy the next 2 weeks, so I can travel too. My husband's going to be around with them, so I'm sorted. So I think that's the balance that we do.
Right. What's the machinery that manages your personal life and your professional life?
What do you mean by machinery?
Like the orchestra, like what's going on in the background? Who's managing what?
So my husband's a pillar. Without him, I can't do what I do. And he's thankfully very successful and confident in his own way. So when this Instagram success hit, he was the one who sat down, both the kids and me, and said, listen, mom has hit something big. I'm going to look after y'all a lot more. I'm going to pull back so that mom can fly. And let's give her a year, 6 months to a year, and see where she lands. And I looked at him, I said, are you sure? Because I have been the primary parent for my kids for all these years. And he's like, it's okay. I've done it for 15 years. I've worked the way you are working now. Go fly. I will pull back for a year. So I think without that support, I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And then that means a lot of communication between him and me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to lose touch, right? So a lot of communication between him and me.
And tell me, how are the teams structured both at home and at work to manage this entire?
So the first thing I did was get a house manager. Mm-hmm. Because I said, I can't be managing bhabhi's ghar pe sabji nahi hai while I'm traveling and working.
Yeah.
So got a house manager and gave her a budget. And I'm okay if she spends a little bit more. You know, it's not like down to the 2 rupee discount. I'm okay with that. So she helps a lot. So I even got my kids a phone. I'm blessed where they each have a didi and a car and a driver. So they have the freedom to exercise their schedule without constantly trying to coordinate and figure things out with me. So the home front is taken care of. And the work front is now I have a team of 8 to 10 people who look at different parts of social media and how they can help me.
Right, right. Yeah. And you have somebody managing your schedule too.
Yes, completely. Without a team, I don't think you can grow as quickly as you want to grow.
Right. Tell me, when you tell your, has there been a moment where your kids have like done an Instagram audit and said, Mom, this is not good. You should have said that. Are they like your best critiques?
They're critiques. I don't know if they're the best critiques.
They're watching and they're listening.
So they don't have Instagram accounts. So they're not fully watching. But it's the opposite. If they've shot something and it does really well, then they feel a lot of pride. Like, oh, I was a part of that success. But they do critique me with my clothes.
Oh, I want to know that.
Yeah. They'd be like, Mom, that didn't look nice. And I'm like, but no, it was okay. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of critique for clothes. But otherwise, they're very, very supportive kids.
Incredible. Which is your favorite tool for work?
Means which app?
Yeah.
For Instagram specific?
Anything.
InShots.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm editing everything on that.
Okay, what would your top 3 tips be for a parent looking to renovate their child's room on a budget?
Multifunctional pieces, that would be number one. Number two, please be very open to hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And number 3 would be keep it light, airy, and that doesn't really come with it. You don't need a budget for that. You just need something that's well-lit, use light colors, light curtains. Not too heavy on the fabrics.
Right. Advice for parents who have twins, because they need two of everything. What are some of the things that can work well for a twin setup?
I think you do need two of a few things, which is study tables, chairs, bunk beds, definitely blankets. So, I mean, what you need on a lifestyle basis, you do need two of that. But otherwise, one of everything and teach them to share.
Yeah. Interesting. 5 brands you would recommend when doing up a child's room. Tell me 5 brands you would recommend when doing up a child's room.
I would recommend wallpaper scissors for wallpaper, Cradle and Ma. I would recommend Flexa. I would recommend Pottery Barn, depending on the budgets. And another really nice one is GWD Kids.
Yeah, they're really incredible. Tips to get your house summer ready.
Tips to get the house summer ready. Please clean all AC vents with vinegar and water, not just water, because it kills the mold, and make sure new mold does not come, because in summertime, you're going to switch on the AC. Number one. Number two, I think just keep it very light and airy. So the cushions are also very summer colors. And
yeah.
Pastels are also nice. So light fabrics.
Okay. I have to ask you this, that when you're building a business online, what are some of the struggles that you face, and what are some of the strategies that you've employed to differentiate from other creators in your space?
I think I've put a lot of emphasis on money is not the goal, content is the goal. So even if I like the product, but the person does not have a budget, I'm okay with that. And a lot of emphasis on constantly doing something that no one has ever done before.
You don't emphasize on that too much.
I do. I emphasize a lot on doing something that no one else has done before, because there's a big risk of failure with that. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay failing. So always trying something new.
Mm-hmm. Have you encountered any backlash from the content that you've posted?
All the time.
And then how do you respond to it?
I take them on. I'm okay. I get trolls every now and then.
What is the worst that you read?
The most popular one is that people make fun of my accent. But now it is a kichdi of an accent because I've lived in so many countries. So that I let go. But I do take on the trolls if they comment on my content. That's when I will really come across and tell you why I shot the content the way I did. So I did something of how to get coffee table books on a budget, so you can go to your roadside bookstores, those stalls, and buy. So everyone said, why are you promoting pirated books? And I said, you know, not everyone has a budget of spending 8,000 rupees on a book just for it to look pretty on a coffee table. So those trolls I'll take on.
Right. Community. You know what I feel, what's incredible about the business that we're building is the community that you're building.
Right.
How do you build communities? Like, what's your secret sauce?
I think my community is built out of sheer passion for design. I'll be honest. It's not because of my personal life. A lot of community building happens when you share personal life and people connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
Since I don't do that, my community building is on a very professional level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out of, I think, like I said, respect for hard work, and they understand the intent that I'm doing. So people actually reply. The kind of DMs I get is all very work-related. So I understand that's the community. That's how they see me.
Interesting. And of course, one of the most important questions, what's the price you've paid for your success?
The price I've paid for my success is sacrifice number one is no social life at all. I have disconnected from most of my friends. And sacrifice number two is definitely spending more time with my kids. That has taken a backseat.
And you don't regret either?
I don't. Because
do you feel like you will be able to go back to it again? Especially the first one. The second one, of course, I know you're not cutting it down. You're just apportioning it, right? That's how I look at it.
Yes.
Like you said, well, the said 5 days.
Yeah.
Versus, so I batch, like today I'm not available, my kids know my schedule, they know that I'm shooting from 9 in the morning to like 6 in the evening, they know that if they're stuck at any point in time, they have to either call dad or call daddy,
right,
or they'll call somebody from my team and make sure that, you know, if something's pressing, then that's coordinated. But they're very well aware of my schedule. And then, of course, I know that, you know, this they know the run-up to awards, or they know run-up to my book launch that happened.
They're also trained, right?
They're absolutely, they're part of the team. They're the most integral part of my team, right? And like you rightly said, I batch produce my content because it's, and people, I think, don't realize what it is to produce content, because it is an energy flowing and you need to harness it, and you want to harness maximum energy on that day because you don't want to keep doing it again and again. Because people often feel like, oh, doing this hair, makeup, showing in front of camera, setting things right, checking frame, it all just comes effortlessly. It's a lot of effort.
It is.
Yeah. And if you see me on any other day, then you know that the hair's tied up and we're walking around in sweats. But the point is that I know that it's just apportioning that time. Yes. And I'll typically pick days when I know that they've gone to school at 7 and they'll come back at 5 and I know they have a class at 6. I'll be smart about it, correct. Right? But the first one, like, I really feel like I lost out a lot of time with my friends, and I don't think it's as easy and effortless to go back.
You don't?
It's not. It's one of, I think, if people ask me what's one of my biggest regrets, is I think I didn't nurture a lot of friendships and I left them behind while I was building Kids Stop Press, and I still regret it because those relationships were important. I tried really hard to make it happen, but unfortunately it didn't.
And I hear you. It's hard.
Because they, like, some of them will hold on and they'll cling on to you no matter what because they know how mad you are.
Yeah.
But some do get, you know, in the process left behind. And and I just feel like one day when we'll be 60, and, you know, and I'm closer to that than you. But I feel like one day we'll be 60 and we'll be like, okay, where are my friends?
Yeah.
And the room will be empty. And that really freaks me out.
I think that's the trade-off we need to make, right? Do you want to live a life where you have no regrets, especially when it comes to work?
Yeah.
Or do you want to have this bustling life, but then you know you didn't give your work 100%?
You know what I mean, friends? It's not like I need a party every
not socially,
night.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's not
I
that.
Call them tier one friends.
Yes, dear. I love it. I love how we're so aligned to this. Yeah. So I have this like inner circle, tier one, then there's tier two, then there's tier three. Absolutely, like an onion bulb, right?
So I'm not worried about tier two, tier three. Yeah. They'll come.
Acquaintances are different from friendships.
Correct.
Right? And those friendships, like, I want that room full on my 60th birthday with all my favorite people.
Yeah, I don't know if I can fill that room, I'll be honest.
No, whatever that, it could be the size of the studio.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I want those tier one people and I don't want to lose them in the process. And that's why I work hard. Today, I work much harder on that than I did 5 years ago.
Actually, that's probably my learning from you now, because my journey is still a bit young when it comes to this work schedule, right? It's only been a year. I do see a lot of the friends that I want to stay close to me phase out a bit.
Yeah.
But it is that extra effort, an extra effort that you put in to make sure you nourish.
And you know, as women, it's so hard that you want to walk. And I don't believe that, okay, women can't have it all, or women need a work-life balance.
At different times in your
life. Absolutely. So, but it's just that I also know, and I'm very, very conscious of the fact that women, especially mums, there's always something that, and I keep saying this, that we have an invisible backpack, okay, where we're like filling it up with schedules and classes and camps and play dates and something else and something else and work and podcast recording and writing a book and something else and something else. But at each point in time, when I climb the next step, I want to make sure that I drop something out of the backpack. Otherwise, at one point in time, it's going to get so heavy that I'm not going to be able to walk any further.
Can I clap? What a great analogy.
No, I keep saying this, that, you know, it's just at some point in time going to break your back and, you know, but keep adding and keep deleting something. Otherwise,
I think you keep prioritizing, right? And
100%.
What you're prioritizing.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And that no, which you've learned last week.
I have.
Right?
Learned.
Oh, first
any big no. Oh. And then there's mad FOMO also that goes when you say no.
Do you get FOMO?
I do get.
Do you look at other people's content and I'm like, shit, I didn't do this?
Not other
people's
content.
Be honest.
Be honest. So I'll be brutally honest. I don't follow, I won't call them competitors, but I call them contemporaries. I don't follow them.
Shit, I thought I was the only one. Yes. And then what happens is people actually tell me.
I'm influenced by them.
And then people tell me, oh, you don't follow and comment. And I'm like, I don't follow anybody.
Correct.
So if you see my feed, I only follow my interests.
Yes.
So I'm interested in, say, food or health or nutrition or, you know, or books. Yeah. My follower base will largely be these people.
Yeah.
I follow my interests because I want my feed to be about my interest and not about.
Exactly.
About competing and
I'm not worried about what they're doing. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm very clear about it. So there's no FOMO.
I actually feel that we're quite similar. Yeah. Because I've kept my personal life so safely guarded that people have actually asked me that, do you live alone or do you have a husband?
I need to ask you, do you feel vulnerable? Is that why?
No, I don't. I'll tell you one of the, and I don't share my husband's pictures. I've never shared my kids' pictures online.
Think I'm single.
Yeah, people think I'm single too.
No, I got all sorts of messages.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So 100%, I get that as well. And it's so strange. So, you know, when I started on this journey, Riddhi, for me, it was a very conscious choice that I've chosen this life for myself. Neither have my kids, nor has my husband. Their life and their privacy is theirs. I think
100%.
The person who's the richest today is the one who has his life not on social media. It's privacy. That's the biggest asset you can actually have today.
Right.
So for me, keeping their lives, keeping their identities to be who they want it to be is so important. And I can safely say this because my daughter's 15 and 11. And there is just no way. And I keep talking about consent in a big way for children.
Right.
We ask our children for physical consent, emotional consent. You know, we tell them about good touch, safe touch, bad, you know, yeah, unsafe touch. But we never speak about the emotional consent that a child needs. They may not want to be on social media. And right, we're constantly creating these digital footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision of not having them on social media, especially on public accounts like yeah, mine, was a very conscious choice that my husband and me made.
Same.
We're like, we're not doing this to them. And trust me, I can tell you this, when my daughter's 15, she's very happy that she doesn't have pictures of her floating around in diapers or having a bath or doing something else.
Yeah.
Which I feel, oh my God, like what force guided me? And I'm glad I never did it.
Yeah.
Because she would have hated me.
I hear you. Like you said, it's our decision.
Yeah.
It's not their decision
yeah,
to be on a public forum.
Yeah.
So even before this interview, if you remember, I asked
yeah,
you saying, please don't ask me about the
yes,
kids, because I don't want what I say here, you know, end up putting pressure on them.
Oh,
later
100%.
On. So this is not about them.
Yeah, it isn't.
Yeah.
It isn't. Yeah. Absolutely. Of course, she comes in, they come in rather in bits and pieces of my analogies, because I feel like because they're such an integral part of who I am.
Of course.
And like literally my team, like, you know,
my one team of them, knows them,
yeah,
they're part of the table
yeah,
discussions, everything.
And people respect you for what you stand for, right? Like for my book launch, my kids were the hosts, and you
yeah,
know, Nakul and me discussed. I said, Nakul, what if, you know, people take pictures, we've never shared their photos online,
right,
and you know, what if people's story, something, you know, everything that we worked on for the last 15 years will go away. And he said, I am very sure people know you.
Yes.
They would not post it out. And you know, for my kids, they just wanted to do it. They're like, Mom, you want us to wear masks and do it? We will do that. But
yeah,
let us do it.
Yeah.
And I am just really blessed, Riddhi. Like
yeah,
from my book launch, my kids spoke. I think they stole the show versus me. But there wasn't a single person who storied mm-hmm, them or tagged or did any of that.
That's kudos like, to your community.
I genuinely believe that I'm a blessed soul.
Yeah.
Because how could somebody not, right? It was so easy to get it on to anybody's phone.
Correct.
Right? But really, I just truly believe that, you know, let the work talk.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what you've done.
Right.
You've built a community plain. Like that. I'm sure there's just no way you've never been tempted to do that home tour. Because you know, as creators, we know what's going to work. But that discipline and
yeah,
that bit of, you know, and I know you, I can just sense it, that I know
yeah,
you've been tempted, but your values and your work is what's holding you back. You're like, no, you know what, I need to reach
yeah,
the million.
In fact, I have done a home tour, but it wasn't even my home. It was my in-laws' home.
Oh.
So I was like, I'm okay with. My in-laws
yeah,
don't care. And I built the home. It was my work
yeah,
everything. But where my kids sleep, their mm, bedroom, their dining table is not going anywhere.
I really admire you for
yeah,
that.
And vice versa.
It's
yeah,
incredible. And I'm telling you, you will never, never ever regret it.
I don't. I feel there's so many other things I can showcase. It doesn't
yeah,
have to be my
yeah,
house.
So tell me, what's your last bit? What's your creative thought process when you are creating, when you're in the create mode? Like, do you have a spreadsheet? Do you have apps? Do you have like, how do you go about that brain dump that this one needs to be done?
I have a diary, which it's like a monster diary where each page is one date and I just put everything on there. And then when I'm actually creating, right, even the voiceovers or how I want the reel to look like and all of that, I need it to be absolutely quiet and I'm zoned in and I'm sitting for 5 to 6 hours and I tell my team, creative time, no calls, please. So they know. Even my kids know, okay, mom's in that space, in her room, at the table. She's doing something and we won't disturb.
Shit. You know, this is like a pinch me moment because I have a Thursday creative block
time
and I'm like, shit, how do we work like this? It's so freaking similar.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So then nobody calls, nobody emails. They know I won't respond.
Yeah. I said, there can be a fire. Please evacuate everyone. Leave me here.
Yeah.
Like, I need these 4 or 5 hours to get my work done, which no one else can do.
Right. And what's the point from thought to execution like?
It's a very long road. But I do believe in delegating a lot. I do trust a lot of people. So if I have an idea, I find the right person for the job, delegate, and then they get it done. Or I handhold them until it gets done.
Right. And what happens when it doesn't get done? What is Riddhi's avatar then?
I don't get angry.
You don't?
Okay. I'd be like, come on, guys, let's make it happen. And mistakes are 100% allowed in my company.
Mistakes are allowed. Procrastination?
So far hasn't been, but I'll send a reminder. Hey, look forward to seeing what you come up with. Or, you know.
Yeah.
Say, are you sending it today? I have 1 hour free now. So it's not like, I don't get aggressive. But that...
You don't get angry.
I don't get angry. But that little... that
nudge.
Yeah.
That nudge is a reminder that you constantly put yourself through.
Yes. But if someone... The pace at which I do work is very fast. So I need someone who can keep up to that pace. And if I feel, like you said, procrastination, if that person is constantly procrastinating, then that person's not the right fit for my team.
So then we
let that person go. I'm very clear. Like, you need to keep up to my pace.
Right. Interesting. Anything else that we don't know about Riddhi that we need
before
we need to wind up?
Maybe I'll start putting more personal stuff on my page. I don't know.
Yeah, let's hope for that.
Maybe not my kids, just about how I feel about things.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Like, what are your thoughts? What's the process? How do you work? Like, what gets things done?
Yeah.
The journey to 500.
Because I know my life seems very glamorous, right? When you're meeting Sadhguru 1 week and talking to Bollywood actors another week. And, you know, there's always something. But there's a lot that goes on.
I'm sure.
Behind.
I'm sure. It must be like crazy. Yeah. Interesting. And I keep sharing this, that, you know, you always want things until you know what's the price you need to pay for it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because we all want to lead somebody else's life until we like there's step into their shoes and like, ah, oh, this hurts.
Yes, there is a price for everything.
Lovely. Yeah. Riddhi, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been incredible. I've literally met like soul sister.
Yes.
Like work soul sister. Like, I cannot believe how similar we are.
But happy to know someone else has the same work ethic and believes in the same things that I do, because it's so rare to find.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And I keep saying this, if you can't keep up with my pace and how fast I can think,
yeah,
you're not the right fit for me.
Exactly.
So it just feels like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I'm so glad my team's going to be editing this and they're going to know I'm not the only one.
No, there are a few more of us around.
Interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
As always, if you love this episode, don't feel shy from sharing your favorite moments and key takeaways from this episode with a screenshot and tag us on Instagram. It's @Mansi.Zaveri and @KidStopPress.